I bought a Wii U game. Here, that's a good topic.
What'd you
I
get?
Bought a Wii U game.
Let me guess.
Okay. Please guess. Guess every game.
This is the only thing I could possibly think of is, what is the Capcom game with the
Monster
lizards?
Hunter.
Monster Hunter.
Nope. I have considered that. I don't have the
I
time.
I have two. It's just, yeah. Mario?
No. Let me just spoil it for you guys. It's Jeopardy.
Shut your mouth.
My my little sister-in-law was over here, and she thought it would be fun to play Jeopardy, so I paid $50 for Jeopardy. Now, here's my question.
Yeah.
It was put out by THQ.
Well,
where'd that
you
money
gotta
go?
Give me your answer first.
Yeah, the answer.
The answer is into a dumpster somewhere.
I don't think the THQ failed because they took the money that they got that we spent on their games and then threw it away.
No, I think that there's no organization to accept this money anymore. So Nintendo calls and says, hey, we have a check for $48 from Justin. And they say, just throw it in the dumpster.
The NPD, the NPD for that game is just a box that says Justin in it. This game sold Justin.
My name's Justin McRoy, and I know the best thing of the week.
What is that voice?
That's
I'm Griffin McRoy.
Like
this is just how I normally talk.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know the best thing of the week.
My name is Russ Frustick, and I know the best game of the week.
This is the besties, where the four of us best friends sit around a coffee table in my den, and we talk about the best things in gaming.
Ooh.
Maybe it's the best game.
So
maybe
hot.
It's the best mechanic. I'm sorry, let me turn down the Java logs.
Frustick, can you blow on my coffee for me?
I can.
Frustick
warm it.
Frustick has the coldest breath of the four of us.
Oh, I thought you wanted hot breath.
You know, it's
no.
Confused. He said the coldest rhymes. He has the coldest rhymes.
Right.
Yeah.
Why would you want your rhymes? Why would you want your rhymes to be cold?
Just like ice cold, you know?
I guess that's true. There's a lot of ice related rappers, very few fire related rappers. Do you want me to list them off?
Walk a Flock of Flame.
Shit.
There's one.
That's the one.
God, this show should just be called, hey bro, I melted your theory down.
we're going to talk about the best stuff in gaming. Who wants to kick it off this week? Who's got something
I will.
Good? Hit me.
I don't know if you guys knew this, but a game came out a couple weeks ago called Bioshock Infinite. Yeah, Bioshock Infinite. It's been in development for the last few years. It's actually a sequel to Bioshock, which was another game that came out few years ago.
You mean Bioshock 2, of course.
No, actually, there was one right before that. It was also set in an underwater city, so I can see why you're confused. Mm-hmm. There was one before Bioshock 2. It was actually just called Bioshock, and this is sort of the continuation of that storyline.
Okay. How many big daddies?
How many big daddies in Infinite?
Mm-hmm.
Infinite.
Whoa.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Oh my god, the title of that game just clicked for me.
Finally.
Oh, that's probably a spoiler to say what the title means. Yeah, it means Infinite Big Daddies.
Okay.
So I wanted to mention this game because
what's the best?
Sorry?
You're supposed to say a best thing.
Oh yeah.
This
no,
is
I was
about to turn
there.
Into a fucking hour and a half long dissection.
That's true. I'll get to the best one. So this is the best example that I'm a fucking crazy person when it comes to completing a game.
Okay.
Did you do the 1999 mode?
Yes.
No.
I did.
How could you?
Okay, so here's what happened. Before I left for GDC, I got a debug version of the game on PS3 and played through it, so I had all like the story and all that stuff. I just put it on normal and finished it. And then I left, and while I was gone, my girlfriend wanted to play it, so she played it while I was gone. But again, to reiterate how insane I am, I had her play it on my account so that when I got back, I'd be she would have unlocked Infinite mode or 1999
mode,
and then I wouldn't have to play through it again on normal. To
you are a crazy person because you can just input the Konami code.
I know, I didn't know that at the time.
Wow,
whatever.
Wait, what you can?
Yeah, and it unlocks it without you having to beat it. Not that if you play that game as 1999 mode at your first playthrough, you're out of your fucking mind, and you're playing the game incorrectly.
I would also agree with that. So that sort of leads me to my sort of discussion about 1999 mode. I remember when it was originally billed, it was described as like hearkening back to 1999, which was the year that System Shock 2 came out. And I feel like for those that have played System Shock 2, they have very strong feelings about it. One of the core tenets of that game was that, like, decisions you make are hugely important. Like, how am I going to spend this one, whatever the units were of character customization, this one unit that I have, and if I pick the wrong thing, I might screw up my character for the rest of the game. It was, like, super, super hardcore, and that's originally how 1999 mode was built, that it was, like, really all about making those tough choices. Apparently, throughout the 15 or 16 years that Bioshock Infinite was in development, that concept didn't really pan out, because the end result is just really hard mode, plus they take money, $100 away from you every time you die, and if you have no money, they make you reload a checkpoint. But I beat it anyway.
I thought I remembered hearing that it was supposed to be like a almost roguelike-esque.
Yes.
Like, if you...
Well... I mean, I just remember, like, again, they just described it repeatedly as System Shock 2E.
So you beat it. You beat it. Yeah. I fucked with it for maybe 15 minutes and was like, this doesn't seem... The first time I died and, like, all my monies was gone, I just was like, no thanks. I appreciate you, but I don't want to pursue this. Was it especially excruciating? I'm guessing not, because the game's only been out for a couple weeks and
it wasn't that hard. I think a lot of people who just start it are really intimidated, because the very first section of the game, which is the part where you don't have a shield yet and you're just fighting guys without a shield, is like by far the hardest part, or close to the hardest part of Infinite or 1999 mode. So I think a lot of people get scared away. Once you get the shield, it's still hard, but it's not nearly as difficult as that sequence. I think what bummed me out is that when I played through the game on normal, like, it's not a super hard game, and because of that, it encourages you to really mess around and, like, use all the plasmids and charge guys and really mess with people. On 1999 mode, it seemed like the only way to really succeed without dying a ton of times and losing all your money was just to snipe everyone and, like, stay at, like, obscene range.
Right. Halo.
Yeah, I mean, well, Halo...
Let your thing recharge.
Right.
Halo is a lot more tactical thought. I think Halo is is actually a good example of an FPS that, like, sort of forces you to think more tactically.
I think
tactically,
if you're really...
Especially on harder
if you're good at it. For someone like me who struggles with it, it's sit, shoot, wait for shield to recharge.
Oh, well, if you have sick... Well, I'll say sick
skills. I forgot. Did you not... I thought that... Sorry, Chris. I thought you were, like, a no-scoper, like... Twitch jumps, rocket leaps. You know.
Oh no, you confused me for Justin.
Oh, I forgot, Justin. You're the no scoper.
Sorry, what is no scoper?
He's so good, he doesn't even know what that means.
I know he does it. That's the thing.
Wait. There's a scope. Because
he invented it.
Yeah. Let's see. It's all preternatural for Justin, by which I mean he's an imbecile.
Well, I just want to mention. So the reason that I played through this was not only for the achievements, even though I really like achievements. I also sort of wanted to, because I felt like I missed when I played through it originally, I missed a bunch of the recordings and other things, and I wanted to see if I missed any, like, big story beats. I didn't.
You did not.
Really.
Yeah. So that was kind of a bummer. I missed a few of the audio logs, and apparently they were goddamn important audio logs. Like, I missed out on a lot of the brother and sister's story points that filled in, that informed, like, they're tied to a lot of the other story points, and so that's one of the things I genuinely like about the Bioshock universe is the series, I should say, is that typically I think it does a really good job of giving you the story, like, in a natural progression, but also saying if you want to understand a little bit more, you can go a little deeper and look through the world to find, you know, clues that help unravel the rest of the story. And that is, like, that's that Sleep No More aesthetic that, like, I totally dig. But
Justin, by the way, Justin, Sleep No More is a theater production in New York City.
Like, I dig that, but I feel like the balance was maybe just a little bit off. And maybe I am, my view of this isn't so great because I arguably missed the three or four most important audio logs in the game. So, did like, you... I had enormous gaps in the plot that I just never really caught up to.
So, did you miss where Columbia is resting on a giant rabbit? Because yes. That's a big one.
Yeah, that one was important.
Mr. Checkers. How early are we getting here with the spoilers?
That was probably the biggest one, is that Columbia is resting on a giant rabbit.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm just saying that the way that all of the characters are connected and the events that precede the game, a lot of that is informed by those audio logs. And there are some, a lot of them just sort of give you some background on the individual characters. The ones that sort of talk about how they are interconnected, if you miss those, like, good luck, man. You are going to watch the ending and not have a goddamn clue what's going on.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. I think it's more so than it was in Bioshock, where I thought all the, like, main story beat, like, recordings were very much on the main path. And then you'd find, like, some fun little side recordings. But for the most part, like, if it was important, you definitely heard it.
Bioshock, I feel like all of the recordings were all about the characters speaking about themselves. And maybe there were a couple sort of about, what was the main guy?
Andrew Ryan.
Yeah, sort of talking about his origins. And, like, that was all very important. But Bioshock, within the first, I feel like, half hour, and I may be misremembering, you pretty much, like, it's a city built under the sea, and it was, you know, a sort of
libertarian escape pod.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, seriously, all of that was the player was filled into pretty much all of that very, very quickly. Bioshock Infinite, it's not quite as I don't know, it's not quite as transparent about that stuff. Well,
it's also because they bother to explain everything. Like, yeah, what's great about Bioshock is, like, there's a city under the sea, and it's an escape from, you know, communism and capitalism and religion. Okay, good, done. Now let's talk about Andrew Ryan.
Wait a minute. Bioshock takes a lot of time to be like, and then the slugs are actually DNA things that are in your body.
Bioshock 2 that really goes into it.
But they went into a lot of that, like, nitty-gritty stuff, whereas, like, Columbia, they never explain how tonics work.
The concepts, though, and what I'm saying is Bioshock Infinite tackles, like, this story is much, like, can you guys really argue that if Bioshock was as complex as Bioshock Infinite is? Like, I don't think you can. Like, I had so many questions about that world. Yeah, for the better. Like, that's my favorite thing about Bioshock Infinite is it's just, like, dripping with lore.
No.
Like,
I mean the opposite, too.
Yeah,
the simplicity of Bioshock is significantly better.
Really?
Bioshock allowed you to... Bioshock, I think... They've got this thing called the... I forget who I heard say this. I think it was in reference to the original Bioshock, where something they repeat a lot in the build-up to the game is the world is the story. Like, world, environment as storyteller. And I feel like... In Bioshock, that's also the case in Bioshock Infinite, but the narrative storytelling presented in the world is a lot less elegant than what you saw in Bioshock. Bioshock Infinite, by comparison, is very one note, and Bioshock is full of these, like, worlds that feel very much related to whoever is in them.
Like you walk in an office. Right, exactly. Or you walk in an office and you see, like, a ton of liquor bottles and a dude hanging off, like, from his neck on the ceiling, and, like, a story develops out of that. Whereas in Infinite, it's rare that you're, like, you might go into a store or something like that, but it's rare that, like, in looking around the room, you'll sort of build a story from what you're looking at. It's more often than not, it's just, like, very pristine, and, like, it's just sort of, like, that's what a store looks like.
Yeah, my problem is, most of the characters in Bioshock, the original one, had... It was good intentions gone sour, you know? they really wanted to improve the world or improve themselves, improve medicine, and their like slavish devotion to that, you know, ruined it, spoiled it. But in BioShock Infinite, it's just bad people are bad. Like,
but
everyone's pretty clearly bad, and the reasons they want things are because they're bad.
Right, and I'm not saying that racism is good. So please don't twist my words, Tommy. But I'm saying that I feel like their intentions could be considered by their like-minded like followers as being good too. Like when you show up in that world, until you get to that one part that sort of sets shit off and then you are just straight killing fools for the rest of the game. Until you get to that part, it's not a bad world. Like, you're looking around it and, like, seeing
pretty
signs.
Racist.
It's pretty horrible.
No. Like, are you fucking kidding? Like, when a barge pulls up and there's a barbershop quartet, you're like, oh, what? Look, these guys are probably lynch mob members. Like, no.
And a mother is saying to her son, I'm sorry, this is, like, the first 10 minutes of the game, so don't worry about spoilers per se, but a mother is saying to her son, you know, you got to watch out for those foreigners.
Well, like, yeah, but that, yeah.
That's how America was before when there was only white people in it. It was amazing. There was like guys, there were guys floating on barges. Ken Levine reimagines an all white America that is a wonderland.
What I'm saying
is that's what I got from Biden.
Yeah.
The intentions are, I felt like, the same, that they wanted to create a better world as fucking horrifying.
But
what specifically?
Yeah, no. I mean that's what I think is missing. Because in BioShock, it's like, I want the freedom to improve medicine, but I can't because the ends would not justify the means in America. Or religion is holding us back, so we're stripping it away. Or we can build. There's what they want to create is there's a clear object. In here, it's like, well, there's a white wonderland if we just put everyone else down.
Yeah.
I don't understand why.
Here is my question, and please bear with me. How did black people get to Columbia? Now, hold on.
Uh-huh.
If I'm black, I hear about this city in the sky where they're crazy mean to black people. And someone's like, get in here, get in this chair, we're going to shoot you up there. I would say, no, that sounds whack. Like,
yeah, or,
I'm not going to do that.
Or if you're Irish or literally anything other than, like, super, super, like, the whitest. The
like
super
how would they,
white.
Unless you're, like, the whitest white person,
how
why would you
find
go
out?
To a city in the sky that you can't get off of?
Do you know what would have been so interesting was if it had been other white people with certain other faults? So the racism was literally like turning in on itself. Like that there will always be classism and racism, and people will always find a way to distinguish lower from higher.
Redheads.
Well, that's a part.
Well,
that's what
Irish.
Sci-fi is supposed to be, right? It's supposed to be like refracting our very real prejudices and very real social problems through a lens with which we can objectively sort of like look at it, because it doesn't trigger that sort of like whatever hang-ups you already have about the thing.
Like that Twilight Zone episode with the pig people.
Yeah, precisely. Like, yeah, that's a classic example. Or you know, Star Trek with basically green people, anytime there's green people, basically. Like, but with this,
fuck
they use
those greenies.
Very real. I mean, they use actual societal issues that we're still kind of struggling with, and it makes it a little harder to stomach. I have to talk about, and this is in the first, we hinted around the action that sort of kicks things off. And I don't want to spoil it. So if you,
this is about a half hour in. So
half hour in.
I
so
guess
it's not
we're
begin,
sort of
but,
we're
so,
sort of well we're kind of.
If you want to skip a couple of minutes ahead, I will try to keep this brief. The very first thing you do, if I had a bestie this week, I don't think this is my bestie, but best ethical quandary in a video game ever. The very first choice you are given is whether or not you're going to throw a baseball at an interracial couple. The answer is no, okay? Like, that's not a choice. You're not like, weighing the various like ups and I'm just not gonna throw a baseball at an interracial couple.
You're saying that, but Ken Levine knew that somewhere, I don't want to cast aspersions, but it would be in Mississippi, there's a man who gets to that point. He's like, oh, I don't know.
God damn. Dang, I got, oof. They were right about these brainy games. This is some tough shit.
That Michael Abbott in the brainy gamer sphere.
I wish they would actually come to you like later in the game and say like, just remember earlier you waited 7.3 seconds before deciding to not throw a baseball at the interracial couple. What were you thinking about during that time exactly?
But if they had said, if you do that, then you'll get 100 extra atoms. Oh my God. Then it would be off to the races. Russ Freshick, if there was an achievement, and it would be a public achievement, so everybody would know that you got it. Would you do that in your pursuit for the 1K?
Could I reload the checkpoint to get other achievement?
No. The disc would snap in half. I'd have to choose.
Is this achievement worth more points than the non-racist achievement?
It's worth 50 points. And there is no non-racist achievement.
This is the only way to 100% Bioshock Infinite.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
It's the go racist.
You have all of them. You missed one, okay? You missed one. And so you get on 360achievements.org or whatever, and you find out what it is, and you go, oh, gosh. But you have 950 points. You need that last 50. You figure out how to do it. You turn the disc on. The guy's like, check this out. Let's see what kind of arm you got on you there, Cal Ripken. He was a pitcher, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you sure.
Which, what you know what the funny thing is? When I first played the game, I actually tried to throw it at the interracial couple just because I knew it was the opposite of what everyone else was going to do.
No. Just because, for science, I was just trying it out, sure.
Also, I hate interracial couples.
That's
stop
the
it already.
Thing. Okay,
guys, enough already with the interracial
enough
couples.
Enough already with that. It's just, I don't know. It's kind of a cheesy, like, what would you do? Well,
I know. It was weak. And there are no real, like, tough, quote unquote, tough choices in this game, which is kind of a bummer.
Well, the quote-unquote tough choices of Bioshock were also kind of bullshit, too. Like,
yeah, but
there was
at least
super
there was
good ending if you never killed any little girls. And then if you kill one little girl, it's like...
Yeah, and what if that little girl was a total jerk?
Yeah.
Which, like, never even discussed.
Maybe she... What if she was like, I threw a baseball at an interracial couple? You're like, oh, shit.
By the way, the achievement, though,
my name is Russ Freshstick.
I don't want to talk about
Mike. Come here, Mr. Bubbles. There's an interracial couple over here. I'd really like to
I don't
want to
talk about my childhood, guys.
Hold on a second.
Really
I've got to go record the besties. Hey, I'm a fun character.
I really want to learn the backstory on the guy that recorded the Circus of Values VO. And also what's the name of the one in Bioshock Infinite?
I forget.
Did you guys ever use that, by the way? Did you ever buy anything from that?
I never bought any health, ammo, or salt from that machine.
There would be no reason to do that.
But in 1999
it's also an achievement
mode,
for not
think,
doing that.
Yeah, in 1999 mode.
Yep. We should move on because we've been talking about my best.
We could literally talk about Bioshock Infinite the entire time. And I guess it doesn't make any sense for us to... Cause
Let's not do that. Let's talk about
a lot
else.
Of ink has been on it. My best this week is... You know, I was going to make a jab about the PS Vita, but you know, it doesn't deserve it.
Best PS Vita game of the year.
Best PS Vita game of the year / the best mashing up of two genres that should not work well together is Guacamelee. Guacamelee is the new jam from Drinkbox. They did Mutant Blobs Attack. That was them, right?
Yep.
Guacamelee is a Metroidvania beat-em-up or a bump? That kind of mixes it around.
Bump.
Which sort of has all the constituent elements you'd expect from both of those things. So the combat is all combo-focused. It's all about dodging attacks and, you know, laying down fat combos. And at the same time, you are, you know, learning new abilities. You are increasing your health and your stamina. You're finding unlocks. You are getting through gear gates as Tomb Raider... coined the term, and just sort of exploring this world, which is like absolutely gorgeous, And I may just be looking at it through rose-tinted glasses because I'm just psyched to play something on the Vita because I really, really like playing games on the Vita. But yeah, it just, it looks great. The controls are great, which really lends itself to the combo heavy combat. Have any of you guys played it?
Here's, yeah, I've played it, but I just want to talk kind of broad about it. If I'm Sony right now, right?
Yeah.
And they're giving all this indie love. I buy Drinkbox Studios, and I throw so much money at them.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I'll
let them expand.
Well, but
let them
but
get a few projects going for you because they are.
They're knocking it out of the park, but I mean, they're knocking it out of the park now. You know, I don't think. Yeah. I think over investing in them and making them sort of spread themselves too thin would be actually pretty terrible.
Sure.
Well, not only that, they don't need to.
I'm not talking like Ubisoft overinvestment. I'm talking about like. Make them capybara size.
No, yeah, no, like. But this is the thing that they don't need to. Sony's whole strategy right now, as they sort of trumpeted at GDC, was that they were going heavy, heavy, heavy into indies, and not just Drinkbox, all indies.
Right.
So essentially, they're, you know, as the finance people say, diversifying their portfolio.
Right. They're,
so
they are,
if you have a game that tanks, it's not a disaster because you have 16 other awesome indies.
They are casting,
like Spelunky,
casting a wide net instead of, you know, going deep into one studio that's shown itself to be very promising. Which ultimately,
exactly.
Like I ultimately agree. Like I want Drinkbox to do very, very well because I think they do incredible work. And also, as I stated before, I want some more goddamn PlayStation Vita games. Yeah. But I mean, I'm also psyched about a lot of the other pub fun stuff that's coming out.
Yeah.
So,
but specifically
you
about
Spliff? Are we partying?
We're partying. Specifically about this game, speaking to Griffin's topic of discussion, I think a lot of people think of Metroidvania-style games as super fun to explore, but the combat is never, like, the driving center force behind these games. It's always sort of just an afterthought. You know, even in Metroid or Castlevania, you're whipping stuff. You're shooting stuff with rockets. It's not, like, super in-depth. In this, you've got a full suite of like combos and special attacks that you can whip out at any given moment.
Is it worth explaining what a Metroidvania is?
No.
Because I didn't know what it was. Like, that term was unfamiliar to me until I started doing this job.
Sure.
I don't think it's hyper. Like,
sure.
I don't think it's the most normal.
Okay.
Name for
it's
a genre.
It is any sort of game, and it can. I guess it can really slot into any genre, but typically action RPG is. I think where it usually lands, and it is, I guess the defining thing is it has a large world you can explore, parts of which are shut off to you until you find a new ability that then lets you access that part of the world, which contains a new ability. You need to access another part of the world, or you can, another big feature of it is returning to places you've been with new abilities to like find treasures that you couldn't access at first because they were out of reach.
Yeah, essentially Castlevania Symphony of the Night or Metroid or Super Metroid, any of the Metroids pretty much.
I think it's interesting. I don't think that's a common term. And I think it's also interesting how many big games use that people might not know.
Yeah,
Batman being, I think
Batman
one
is
of the
most biggest. Yeah, Batman is, it hits that aesthetic to a big point. Tomb Raider.
New Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider did it. Tomb Raider coined the term gear gating, which I really like. It's very.
Did they coin that term? I don't know.
No, that's a very old term.
Really?
Yeah. I'm pretty positive.
But I don't know. I think you're right, Russ. I think what's great about Guacamelee is the combat is great, which is nice because you'll discover a big room and then all the doors will shut off and it'll be like a big arena. Or, since you're a luchador, a wrestling ring that you can't leave until you kill everything in the room. So just throw gobs of enemies at you that you then have to, fight off without getting killed yourself. The combat's really great. The platforming is really, really fun. Especially, eventually you get the ability to sort of switch between these two dimensions. And then once you do that, it sort of has, what was that game? Not Ikaruga, but the platformer that
Bubsy 3D.
Oh shit!
Bubsy
3D.
Yeah.
Like it was one word.
Once Guacamelee, once the main character of Guacamelee starts like making really fun puns. Like,
Outland.
Once he starts gexing poetic, it like the game really takes off. Outland.
Guys, have you seen that new Smurfs 2 joint?
Oh, Jesus.
That game looks great.
Yeah.
It looked, I mean, talking about like old games like Gex. It looks like a PlayStation 1 game that you can buy on your Xbox 360.
What awesome. Game is this?
Smurfs 2, Revenge of the Smurfs 2, is coming out this summer for next gen or current generation consoles.
Next gen. It's oh the first God. Announced Xbox 720.
Ubisoft announced the next box by saying Smurfs 2 will be the first launch game.
They said we need something to fight against Knack in the mind space of young kids.
You want to talk about the fact that I'm growing a beard?
Yes. Desperately.
When I went to GDC, generally when I travel, I don't shave. I usually shave on the normal about once every 4 days. But when I travel, I sort of like round up and say, screw it. And when I went to GDC, I didn't shave. And then right at the end of GDC, Plant made a comment saying, oh, you look growing a beard there. And I'm like, nah, I'll probably shave it. And I was like, and Plant was like, no, you should keep it. It looks
God
really
damn
good.
God damn you, Plant. Because it really only takes one. It really
it
only
takes,
takes
one person.
I got, when I did Movember a couple years ago, I got one comment from somebody saying, I don't know, I think it kind of looks pretty dope. And now that poisoned my mind to, like, so deeply that now when I look back at pictures of myself with this pervert's mustache, I think, like... Yeah, like when it was time to get our polygon, I don't know if you guys remember this, but it was time to submit a picture to get polygon portraits. I was like, I know what picture will be nice and representative of me permanently. Let's get this pervert pic and see what it looks like. I'll tell you what it looked like. I had a single brown rhombus that looked like somebody had laid a turd across my face. Didn't translate well to polygonization.
Was that the one and only polygon portrait that was rejected and had to be redone?
I sent it back because I was like, I'm trying to establish a fucking brand here.
I'm not, to be honest, super caring for the whole beard thing. I can't escape the feeling that there's just a shitload of pubes on my face.
Yeah, but oh, is it long like that? Is it like Norse? Are you Norse?
It's coarse.
Here's the problem. I encouraged you before your like stubble just turned into like just a bristly pube bush.
That's where it's getting to. I actually ordered a beard trimmer. So we're going to see if that makes things better. I promised myself I would last a month. So far, I'm at 18 days.
Okay.
Do you have places where it's just not coming? That's my problem, is that God...
No, it's okay.
I want a beard so bad. I tried for a couple years there when I was living in the harsh wastelands of Chicago. And then as soon as I moved to Austin, I shaved it right off, and I looked a billion times better. Yeah. So, like, you have that to look forward to. You're going to look pretty shitty for a month. But then next month, you're going to feel really good about
yourself.
What's
up, Face? I missed you.
I miss you, Face. You're so smooth.
But I don't know. It's not just Chris Plant giving me the props. Oh. A lot of people have been.
I like
it. What about your wifey?
She likes it. She likes it a lot.
Oh, see, now you're screwed.
Yeah, what about your kids? Do you think when you shave it off, your kids are going to be like, where'd daddy go?
Do the kids lose their beards if I shave mine off?
Yeah. You have a family beard shave.
No, I meant sort of like a reality shift thing, like twin realities altering the flow of time.
We're talking about BioShock again.
We are.
I want to
talk my beard story. Let's talk about something else.
I want to talk about my best of the week. My best thing of the week is my best Easter egg that is actually better than the thing it is hidden inside.
Okay. Oddly, I actually saw this in the email, and it made no sense to me at all.
Let me hip you to it.
Hypnotize.
You could go right now and get a game called Soda Drinker Pro.
Got it.
Okay.
That game makes me so angry, by the way.
I've gotten so many PR emails for that game.
It's amazing.
Makes me angry because like it looks like something I could make now in Unity with the limited Unity abilities that I have. But this dude is getting, like, notch rich off it.
He's getting, like, so paid off it, but here's
Lady. I don't know who made it. Who made it? Do we know?
No, I don't know.
Is it anonymous?
It's on Steam Greenlight right now, and I think people are probably going to greenlight it because how could you not? But here's the thing about Soda Drinker Pro. It is a game in which has movement, and it has two buttons, one to raise soda to your lips and one to drink soda. And the environments are terrible, and the whole time you're playing, you hear
what
someone
do you need
like
environments
like a dist. What?
Why do you even need an?
Every level is like, drinking a soda at the beach.
It's all about immersion. That's sort of what
does it impact the gameplay at all?
No.
It impacts your experience. That's like the promise of next gen is, hey, now you're still going to be shooting aliens, but now you're going to do it in environments.
Oh.
So you in the distance, you always hear a voice saying things like, I love this soda, and I wish I could eat soda. And then sometimes you find a bonus soda, and it says, bonus soda. And that has no impact on the gameplay. But here is the thing about Soda Drinker Pro. Soda Drinker Pro is terrible. There's a rock in the second level. If you stand near the rock for like 30 seconds, the screen becomes covered in like white particles. Yeah. And then the screen goes white, and then a box appears that says, click to unlock Vivian Clark.
Okay.
Click the box, and you get an email that sends you a download for a game.
It's not even on the same piece of software?
Called Vivian Clark. And Vivian Clark is an astounding game so far. It's a 40-level, basically a demo, and... trying to describe its structure would be sort of a misnomer. It would like be futile, but what you've basically got are WarioWare style mini games where the things you interact with draw you into different levels. So like when it begins, you're basically a raindrop, and the first thing that you're trying to avoid clouds or whatever. If the first thing you fall onto is a hot air balloon with a snake in it, you're suddenly transported to that snake's minigame. If the first thing you fall into is a spaceship that says space written on the side, then you're transported to that minigame. It's all controlled with space bar and directional keys. So you're being sucked from sort of world to world, and you can die. And when you die, you're transported back to this thing called the campfire, which lets you play a mini game to get back into your original game. The idea is you're trying to find all the different stages it has. And it's like, it's absurdist, but there are certainly like mechanics at play here. And they actually launched a Kickstarter to make, you know, the full game. So basically, Soda Drinker Pro is a Trojan horse, a Prosian horse, if you will.
They call that a backdoor pilot.
Backdoor pilot, exactly. It's like the farm.
I like that a lot. It's like the applesauce around the pill that you know. Yeah. You describe Vivian Clark. Is that it?
Yeah.
It sounds interesting, but not like I've got to download that. Interesting. Soda Drinker Pro is undeniable.
Yes.
Yeah. So I have so many questions to ask you, Justin.
Hit me.
Well, I three jump to mind.
Okay.
Number one. How would you know to wait by the rock for 30 seconds?
You wouldn't. That's why it's called an Easter egg. You got to get on
How
Google.
Did you personally know?
We got an email from the Soda Drinker Pro people that says, stand by that rock, like basically from their PR.
So obsequious was his Easter egg that he had to out it among the rest.
Wait, I had another question.
He outed it with the giant bomb. Yeah, what's up?
Why is it called Vivian Clark?
That is another great question that I have.
Why is it called Soda Drinker Pro?
Again, who knows? I have no insight into these geniuses. You know,
I've been waiting 52 episodes to say the word obsequious on the air. Did I use it right? Done.
Doesn't matter. Nobody listening to this show knows.
No, obsequious means being super, super nice to the point of being obnoxious.
What was the word?
I thought it meant to be obsequious.
Hmm. Well,
anyway.
So you Justin, can go get Soda Drinker Pro right now, and then you can secretly unlock Vivian Clark.
I'm looking at Vivian Clark's Kickstarter page.
Okay.
Here's what you didn't mention. The artwork looks like the junk that you would draw inside your science notebook in, like, sixth grade. But watercolored beautifully. So the art is kind of crappy looking, but it's full of color and really pretty. There's a really ugly star wearing a baseball cap, eating a starship while wearing purple roller skates.
Yeah.
And then he runs into the mouth of a green monster and comes out its poo hole.
Yeah.
It looks really good. The thing is, it looks much prettier than Soda Drinker Pro, which might be the ugliest game I've ever seen.
No, Soda Drinker Pro is a nightmare. a nightmare landscape of, like, not just bad design choices, but almost negative design choice. Vivian Clark has a distinct. It is making choices. It has choices.
I have a follow up question.
Okay.
Vivian Clark has no relation to Vivian Clark, the gynecologist who graduated from Harvard University and loves her dog Emma.
I don't believe so. No.
So I feel really bad for this person because at present she is the leading SEO optimized name for Vivian Clark.
Her profile is about to blow up. I don't get it. Where's the rain ghost?
I don't get it. What is a starship wearing? What is a starfish wearing roller skates and a beret have to do with me?
I need to. That's a level. I'm looking.
This
I'm
might
looking
be an ARG.
I'm looking for a local gynecologist solution. Solution. Let's see. Let me just Google this. Well, this won't do. It looks. I need to be inspected down there. I don't need drawings of starships being eaten.
I don't need
poop
snakes
stars
and hot air balloons.
I don't need this. I need something else. I need something far more clinical. Chris Plant, what's your best thing?
My best thing is the best mini game collection to destroy a best friendship, and that is the arena mode in not Castle Crashers, Battle Block Theater.
Did you get confused there for a second?
Oh, I did, because I'm so used to saying Castle Crashers for the name of the game made by these people, since it took them, what, like 900 years to release Battle Block Theater?
Now, yeah, it was like 930 years.
900 years ago. Do you guys know what Battle Block Theater is? Should I tell you?
I really don't. I mean, like, I've been aware of it, but, like, I actually don't know that much about the game itself.
Okay, so Battle Block Theater is a up to four people platforming game in which you, like, jump and you reach down on ledges to help people up onto higher ledges.
The campaign is only two people, we should mention.
Oh, it's only two? Okay. Yeah. But, yeah, you help people across these little block-based levels, and that's pretty much it. I mean, it's very good. But it's a platformer in
it
the
seems,
truest sense.
What is difficult to sort of to describe is that it is, like, its level design and even its game design is so modular. Like, it is called Battle Block Theater because every level is composed of blocks. Like, and that's really, like, that's really all the environments are blocks of different types that have different effects on the gameplay. So, like, when you're playing it, the game is very, very much the core, like, gameplay loop is very much the same from level to level. It's just all about sort of identifying how those blocks are laid out and how you are going to navigate them.
It's like Little Big Planet.
It's very much designed for a level editor. It's unlike Little Big Planet. It's purely platforming, and it's. I don't think your Little Big Planet comparisons.
No, it doesn't
fair.
Hold up at all, because Little Big Planet is all about. No, it's all about drawing. Sort of, you can draw complex shapes, and you can do, like, you can program things into the environment.
But only dorks do that.
Okay, well, Battle Block Theater is like it's just about the blocks. It's just about building mazes out of these blocks, or, you know,
basically using, like, the, you know, dozen or so available systems, like the bouncy block or the sticky block or the spikes and the various different enemies, and putting them together in interesting ways.
That's
the main game. You can build levels and trade them with friends. It's very good. But what's better is the arena mode, which is probably how many, eight different competitive
modes?
It's
like seven or eight around there.
Yeah. And they are all over the place, and all of them are so well balanced, surprisingly so. One of them is basically a soccer ball is dropped in the middle of the stage. This is a 2D, of course, and the goal is to grab the soccer ball and throw it into your opponent's hoop. Simple enough. Another one,
just like real soccer.
Another one is each player has a horse. Which is kind of like capture the flag. You run to their side, get their horse, and bring it to your stable. of course, most of the time you're just beating each other up, preventing them from getting to the horses. What are some of the other ones, Prush?
So there's one where you're running through the stage, and like every block that you run over turns the color of your team. But it blinks, and while it's blinking, the other team can run in and steal your color and make it their own, and whoever has the most blocks colored by the end of the round wins, essentially.
Sort of that Tony Hawk, whatever.
Yeah, but with less grind and skitchin'.
Well, I've just lost interest entirely.
So I think probably what's the most amazing is that even simple modes, like there's a deathmatch mode, relatively, you know, just like beat up the other guy and get as many quote-unquote kills, are really well thought out to the point where, like, even playing with just two people, you can play with up to four in adversarial, but even just playing with two people, it's super fun and addictive and strategy driven. They just like so fine-tuned each of these modes to, like, for example, in the deathmatch mode, if you punch someone or hit them on the head, you'll earn 2 or 3 points. If you actually kill them, you'll earn like 20 points. If you suicide, the other team will earn 10 points. So there's like this whole strategy into what is ordinarily, like in most games, it would just be like, well, you kill them and you get a point. But they like really thought through each of these different modes. And more so than any other game I've played in a long time, maybe Spelunky felt this way too. It seems so perfectly designed for just like, oh, you have some people over, this is the game you would play and have a ton of fun at. It's like that spirit of, you know, in the way that you played Mario Party and some of the better Mario Party mini games.
Oh, God, that kills me, like, the way you say his name.
It's Mario. That's his name, Mario.
Mario. Okay, well, on top of all that, it's made by the people who made Castle Crashers, which means it is this very cutesy 2D art. It's unbelievably charming. Things die in very grotesque ways. There's a bit of gore, but it, I don't want to say it looks like Looney Tunes because there's no blood in Looney Tunes, but it definitely has like this,
I don't think there's blood
almost
in this.
Almost like a Ren and Stimpy-ish kind of feel.
Yeah.
In terms of how it handles death.
There is a guy that melts from acid and his skull is left over.
Jesus. Yeah. I've only played the demo, but I want to put more time into it. It's just there's something about the way that the platforming feels, which I know I'm probably like the worst person in the world to talk to about this because I do like really enjoy the Little Big Planet games. But
yeah.
Oh,
I know. I think like
at the platforming alone in those games is what drives me nuts,
terrific,
and I think this game
right?
does it a lot
it's
better.
It's just so floaty. I don't know. I think when I saw like trailers and stuff for it, it sort of harkened back to me. One of my favorite games like this that are sort of like these, platformer fighting party games was Ragdoll Kung Fu. I fucking love that game.
Yeah.
And I think I was one of the only people on the earth to like really get into it and enjoy it. But
you
may
be the best person on earth at it.
Probably. There was like a solid 2 months there where like whenever my friends would come over, we would get some Ragdoll Kung Fu going because it did have like sort of those crazy like there's like a dodgeball mode that was I think sort of designed to just be an offshoot thing, but like so many mini games, like it just became the core product for me. I don't know, I feel like the platforming feels so old school. It feels like digital, it feels binary, it doesn't have that sort of floatiness, and I think that you can go too far with that, but I think that your platforming needs like just a little bit of that. Do you know what I mean? Like whenever you jump, you jump to 200 pixels every time.
You do have more control in BattleBox Theater. Like, you can do a little jump or a bigger jump and, like, a double jump.
Right, that wasn't the best way to put it. You do have, like, depending on how long you hold it.
But it does feel like Mega Man, whereas, like, again, the extreme on the other side is Little Big Planet, where there's, like, so much control that it's just a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
I like how the jumping and the mechanics feel in BattleBox Theater, but I can get why some people would be a little put off.
I need
by
to spend
it.
Just a little bit more time with it. It may be that Little Big Planet is sort of poisoned, Mike, because the level design aesthetic and the gameplay are so like stand on different ends of the spectrum that maybe that might just be why I am. I don't know. Haven't.
But arena mode is where it's at.
Hasn't set my world on fire.
What I like about it is that I feel like there are very few games that I own or that even come out that I can throw on the TV when friends are over that don't play video games and everyone like wants to play. Like even if they don't normally play, they're one, their interest is piqued by how it looks, but two, they somehow get the sense just watching it that like, oh, I could easily do that. And when you play it, they actually can. Like, it's kind of disappointing how few of those games come out that aren't on iPhone.
Yeah, that's true. what are we looking at next week, you think?
Oof.
We don't know. It could be anything.
What's our best? What's the best of all
these? Oh, yeah, we have to decide.
The best of all of these?
Yes.
Well, I can say it's definitely not Frosh 6.
No, I think here's the key. Is we're not rewarding the best one. I think we're rewarding the best argument.
The best
for the
angle
one that we
that people brought.
Wow. Best angle.
I don't know. I can't put Guacamelee down.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to anybody but mine. So that get kind of an
I
impasse.
Did. You know what? I got to say, I think Justin is my pick.
Thank you, Russ Frushdick.
Vivian Clark.
I think Griffin's mine.
Yeah, I think mine is mine.
No, you can't be yours.
No, you
can't yours.
Pick your own.
I hate this angle of the show. I can't.
You gotta
this is
love
important.
It.
Competition. People wanted competition.
Dude, we have abstracted competition out to its most, like, nonsensical. We are picking, we're right now comparing the best thing.
Whose line is it anyway? Podcast competition.
I think Bioshock Infinite. I think Russ did good with that. I'm just so sick of that game getting lambasted by the. It's got a fucking, like, 99 on Metacritic. It's gotta be good.
I mean, that's science.
Yeah, dude, it got a 10 on our site. How can you argue?
I genuinely don't get why everybody's beefing on that game. I don't get it. It's a super good game.
It is a good game.
It's like the best game. Everybody's beefing.
I don't know about best game.
It's super
I like good. Tomb Raider Brawl.
Okay, so Vivian Clark, the gynecologist.
If you work for Gamefly, can you put that in an envelope and send it to me? I've been waiting for like a week. I'm not made
of
time. You
haven't played Tomb Raider yet?
No. It seems like one of those single-player heavy experiences. I don't like dropping cash on that unless it has Bioshock in the title.
You are in for a treat.
I know. I'm excited.
You know what? I think Justin won. Sure, yeah.
Vivian Clark, the gynecologist from Harvard her dog, Emma.
Congratulations.
Cool. Hey, guys, what's up next week? Anything cool happening?
I'm still playing Defiance.
Man, I need to get on that.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
It's,
you really do.
My review's gonna be going up soon, but it's fun. It's a fun one. I feel like there's a 3DS game or something coming out next week. What's coming out? Russ, are any good iOS games? I haven't played any. I played Slayin' for a bit. That might be fun to talk about.
That was fun, right? You liked Slayin'?
Yeah, I like Slayin'.
Badland is also really good on iOS. I'd strongly recommend that.
Okay. Well, now, okay. Why don't you put your money hat away?
Oh, and we got Dead Island to talk about next week.
No, okay. We don't, because it's not out
yet.
Yes,
we do. Yeah,
it's next out the 23rd.
Oh,
crap.
Dumb plant.
I'm going to forget and forgot
we'll
everything.
We'll figure
about
it out. I don't think we need to decide now. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you guys for listening. I feel like this is a good. I'm talking to the three of you.
Oh, hey, you guys know what you should do?
What?
You guys and everyone listening, you should go to the Webby Awards, which. We should get the address, and you should vote for us
for besties.
For no, for Polygon.
Besties won't be nominated for shit ever.
Ever no, but Polygon is nominated for a Webby Award. We're gonna drop the link in the post, and you should click it, and then you should go vote for us. We'd appreciate it.
Oh wait! There was something else that I forgot.
What?
Apart from the Webbies, which is very important. Do you remember last week when I mentioned that some gentleman gave me a screenshot?
Oh, you sussed it out.
I sussed it out because the creator, it's actually the dude who made McPixel.
Oh, shit. Why wouldn't he fucking introduce himself to you?
So, admittedly, he might have said his name, but it might have, I just might have forgotten.
No. Say what's the truth.
It's possible that I didn't fully comprehend the name coming out.
Why is that?
Because
did you have
it
an aphasia?
Loud.
Okay, not that you're a huge xenophobe. That's not it, right?
Yeah. Right. Anyway, we all love McPixel, so this new game is definitely something worth keeping an eye on. I still don't know what it's called. I asked him again what the game is called on Twitter, and he still won't tell me.
That's
so
ARG.
It's
part of it.
Sas Solwoski, or something to that effect, is his last name.
Still can't get it.
But SOS is his first name.
You would think if you're coming back to the show to talk about it a second time, you'd really nail it down. But no, you're a busy man. You're busy growing a beard.
Please vote first in the Webbies.
Okay.
And we'll be back with you next Friday.
The besties.
Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best things?
I guess. It's not great yet. We'll find it.
Besties!